21st, pardon, March 15th meeting of Los Altos Space and Management Committee meeting to order. So we have the pledge, since you did such a good job last time, Rob.
My pleasure.
Okay, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So can we go ahead and have roll call, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Garfinkel.
Yes.
Director Zimmer.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
I'm here.
Chairperson Wilhelmsky.
Present. Okay, we'll go run through the board member comments.
You guys gave, finally it came on. You guys threw me a loop. You changed your locations there. So we'll start with Bill.
I have no comments for at this time.
Danny?
Yeah. I have no comments. They're going to be in the executive.
I just have a brief comment. My wife had knee replacement surgery, so she's still in the hospital. So if I have to take a call, I may step out, in which case you'll have to take over. So
okay, sounds good.
Just give a heads up on that. I don't think she's in the transitional facility now, but in case, just a heads up for that. Okay, so that brings us to the consent agenda. Anybody want to pull any of these items? You do?
I do.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry to be so surprised.
Yes. Do you not want me to? So if we could pull B out and look at the invoice from the State Water Resources Control Board.
Okay.
And just had a question regarding that invoice of...
Well, if it's just a question, we don't need to pull it. You can ask a question as long as it's not a substantive discussion. So if you have a question, see if Rob can answer that, and then we can decide whether we need to pull it or not.
Okay. So regarding that invoice, wasn't sure what that charge was for. It came from the county, and is this a one-time charge or going to be a reoccurring cost? If you could just add a little clarity on that charge.
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. So the State Water Board reviewed actually work that was initiated before even the formation of the BMC, and that was on our creek discharge study. We had a series of technical papers, and they required a determination from the Division of Drinking Water as to whether the project would be incidental or disposal recharge, or would it be characterized as a groundwater recharge project. And so they assign a staff member, and if you've gone through DDW reviews before, they do bill their time for those reviews. And this is an invoice that included, they lumped several Los Osos activities into one invoice. Part of it related to a review of the treatment plant tertiary processes, which the county paid directly, which is mentioned really briefly in the staff note. The remainder of it was specific to the creek discharge study that this group had funded. We don't think that's going to necessarily be ongoing. There's no active work that the state is doing right now, but they did give us that formal call that, yes, it's a groundwater recharge project, which is why we're taking the next steps in the other part of the agenda.
So does that answer your question, or you want to pull it for discussion?
No, that answers my question. I just wasn't sure the timing of when that originated, but okay.
All right. Any other questions? Okay, we'll open the consent up to public comments.
Yes.
Throwing this off. I just wanted to say I thought the minutes are excellent, and I think that's a really, just commend whoever's putting the minutes together. It's very thorough and able to keep us all informed. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other? So it's a pat on the back for you, Rob.
It's actually for Matthew. That's two in a row.
Okay.
All right, good job, man.
All right, thank you. So we'll close public comment, bring it back for action on the consent agenda.
Move approval of consent.
Moved approve. Second?
Second it.
All right. You got that?
I do.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, so that moves us on to item number 6, which is the Executive Director's Report. Rob, we'll turn it over to you.
I have a brief visual on this, on a portion of the report. Bear it with me here.
It's a nice visual.
Oh, actually, it's the county's visual. Okay. So just to update the committee on issues of financing, that we are continuing on our path that we mentioned last time, and that's to advance our capital projects to a point of being shovel-ready and funded to the extent that we can. And once those are to that position, we'd have to make that decision as to whether a community-wide special tax is still warranted or whether those projects will be funded through rates and charges. I know the district, from its perspective, is having an ongoing discussion of capital projects and its ability to fund part of Program C, and we'll talk a little bit more about that under Agenda Item 7A. But at this point, we're not putting any staff time to the special tax, although there is a budget line item. When we decide to do that, we are carrying that budget. This visual, I don't know that we've shown this here, perhaps we have, I think is a helpful visual that shows the difference between the adjudicated area of the basin, which is shown in hatched red, and that is within the basin, what we call the plan area, and within the jurisdiction of this committee. The areas that are shown in yellow are outside of the adjudicated area, but are within Department of Water Resources, Los Osos groundwater basin definition. We call those the fringe areas, and the county has been working with those areas. They had a recent meeting to discuss the next steps to comply with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, or SGMA, and the county is moving forward to formalize their position as a groundwater sustainability agency, and then ultimately to produce a sustainability plan there for those fringe areas, which generally pump from a shallow alluvium. And so just wanted to give a general update on that. Some of you may have gone to the February 27th meeting, which I heard was well attended. So there's a series of regulatory deadlines that are facing those fringe areas, and there will be a public hearing on April 4th at the Board of Supervisors to talk about executing a resolution to formally form that GSA, or Groundwater Sustainability Agency, over those areas, and then they'll follow up with the preparation of the required plans. In the event that the county does decide to ultimately request that the DWR take another look at the groundwater basin boundary, they would do that in 2018. And there's a website link in the staff note for those who are interested in more information. Salt and nutrient management plan is ongoing, and we're expecting to see a draft of that document.
Rob, before you go on, sure. I think we should bifurcate this, so if anybody has any questions,
good.
I would make it.
Yeah, let's do it.
So anybody have any questions on this?
Yeah, just a little bit of background.
This is a question, so, not discussion. Just
right.
Sure.
For clarification here.
So if the county forms the GSA, there'll be an advisory committee, and how will that advisory committee be established? Because the county will be the only agency participating, so is there, with the close proximity to the BMC, will there or should there be an opportunity for the BMC to be a part of that agency or not? What influence do we have? And I don't know if those details have been worked out yet or not.
The meeting on the 27th was, I think, really positive, and the way I'm approaching it and our staff's approaching is that we would welcome any participation in the advisory committee for the fringe area GSA. It's not that many parcels. It's not that many people. If any interested individual wants to participate, I'm okay with that, whether there are some more constraints. I don't think it becomes an unmanageable group. The other thing to know about the work plan of the GSA, it's totally focused on getting a boundary modification to put itself out of existence, at least as far as a high-priority, critically overdrafted basin. And so we make this real clear to the folks who participated that with their cooperation by giving us well information, we hope to further substantiate the case that there's no connection with the fringe areas and the adjudicated part of the basin. I think there's a good chance we just need to go through the steps to document it, resubmit it to DWR, and get out of there.
So we will continue to get an update on that in progress.
Sure.
And
absolutely. Okay. So April 4th is the formation of it. Like I say, we have the necessary studies in place. I know Martin may be able to explain a little bit more about it if you're interested. But basically, we have to show the lack of communication with the hydrologic communication with the adjudicated part of the basin.
And in the attempt to show that there's no connection, then that would support the basin boundary modification, right?
Yes.
And so those areas
right.
would just not, it wouldn't get included into the BMC area.
That's our fervent hope. And, whether DWR decides they have to declare some other basin to take account of that area, maybe not. We would certainly submit, and again confirmed by the technical studies underway, that it's not a high or medium priority basin. So that's our game plan there, and I think we'll be successful.
Okay, thank you.
Bill, did you have a question?
No, the last statement by Bruce answered my question.
Okay. So now we can move on to the salt and nutrient.
Oh, thank you. I'll stop at each one.
Yeah, thank you.
Salt and nutrient management plan update. The county is currently preparing a document, and they think it will be released in the April timeframe. So we're looking forward to that, and we'll certainly be talking about that in this context, but also there will be a community meeting. We'll see who actually shows up to a salt and nutrient management plan meeting in the community.
I think county staff shook their head yes when you said that.
Yeah. pretty esoteric issue there. Any questions on that from the committee members? We have a brief status update from the Los Osos Wastewater Project. They're reached about the 75% mark with almost 3,200 connections, and they're ongoing. Flows are up a little bit. We're seeing a weekend peak now at 420, so coming up slowly. So we'll see if the 500,000 a day peak ever gets there. They are continuing to use the Broderson percolation site. And there was a few questions at our last meeting that we picked up on the minutes about what was happening with the down gradient monitoring wells. And so the county released their December report, and we looked at the water levels in those wells, and you really can't see any mound yet. I know from previous discussions with the groundwater hydrologist, it was thought that it'd be probably 12 months before we begin to see development of a mound. So as those periodic groundwater reports are available, if we start to see information that's of interest to the committee, I'll bring those forward. But right now, those wells are at historical levels.
I had a quick one.
Yeah.
So are they monitoring monthly, bimonthly, quarterly? What's the monitoring time?
I think that's quarterly monitoring.
Semi-annual.
Okay.
Thank you. So that's timely with what we're doing on ours, too. So.
Right. Great. A few notes on a potential new piece of legislation that's been introduced in the California Senate, SB 252. And this is similar to other bills that have been introduced, but we thought this would be of particular interest to this committee, where the bill is requiring new wells to go through a process of notification and meet certain requirements if they're within a critically overdrafted basin. And so this is still in committee. It's not on the books yet as law, but it's something that we're going to be tracking because it could have implications for Los Osos. I know when there's a discretionary permit here within the basin. The county is requiring information, but this would actually put it as a California statewide law for critically overdrafted basins. And that completes my report. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Any other?
If I could go back to the zone of benefit analysis and some of the funding, what we were talking about, I know we've been mentioning some of the remaining two program C wells, but at this time we're not pursuing pursuing any funded administrative or capital cost. Is there some activity that we could be doing for the zone of benefit analysis to help prepare for 218 and things of that nature? I think, you know, what we should really be doing is looking at how are we going to secure this funding long term and see what options are viable and not, and how that impacts us. So just that statement of it, nothing's being pursued at this time, you know, I think we should be moving forward on that.
Yeah, I really appreciate you bringing that up for clarification. So current perspective, and we could certainly modify this, is that, you know, we had the technical report that the consultant did on the types of funding that would apply and how those would be secured if we did a special tax. And there was a few options. They came forward and gave a presentation focusing both on the administrative costs and then on capital costs. On the administrative costs, it was thought at the time that if you just went out for admin, you'd probably have you'd risk an unsuccessful vote. Those have been difficult to get in other areas. And with respect to capital, you know, we did apply for Prop 1 dollars, and then having those projects in a state where they're shovel ready or close to it is very important to be either competitive for any grant program, and or even if you're going to do, say, a special benefit type assessment, you really have to have a defined project. And so figuring out our final well sites for Program C, something that the district has undertaken as part of their budget process, so they're looking at a number of sites and actively pursuing those. Once those are nailed down and we know here's where we'd like to drill, here's where the pipelines are, and here's the coastal development permit progressing, that makes us a lot more competitive and more clear as to where our funding path is. But it's the funding at this point is not delaying progress on those projects. They're moving forward as fast as they can with respect to site selection and that sort of thing. So be happy to take more committee direction on that, but that's, you know, we've got a budget item that we can trigger any time for this calendar year. If we feel like now is the time to look at a community-wide measure of some kind, it just seems perhaps a little bit early to do that, and that's current perspective.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Thanks for the clarification. In addition to these wells, are there other projects that we could be working on to get shovel ready or anything of that nature that, you know, we have a list and are there other projects that we could be looking at right now?
Our Program A projects are already self-funded by the different entities, and so those projects are essentially funded now. Not all of them are complete. The district's 8th Street well being a prime example. It's been drilled but not equipped. You know, your Los Olivos well. The one project that was not on the previous month's list, which I brought forward under a different agenda item, is the monitoring well that we'd love to put in Cuesta by the Sea. Yeah. We put a number on that, coordinated with Cleith a little bit on the cost of it. And so that's one that, you know, again, we included it in the Prop 1 pre-app, but we'd like to see that monitoring well moved forward sooner rather than later. But when you get into programs B and D, those were at least originally identified as supporting future growth and not something that we needed under current population. All of the monitoring costs that are within the basin plan are already being funded through this committee. So the only other item is conservation, which is a separate agenda item here, and looking for funding for that. So really we've kind of rounded out the programs that are in the basin plan. We have strategies for each one, but that's current perspective.
Comment. Also on
Program C is the interconnection between S&T and Golden State. And that could be something that could, should start moving forward.
We'd love to, in the case of the projects that the district's involved in, there's some forward progress there. If the two staffs of the two parties want to get together and begin looking at sites and specifics on that, we can certainly bring that forward into at least a planning stage. Perhaps it's a lot easier than the recently completed intertie between the district and the Golden State, which was expensive.
I think we should pursue that, and I'll pursue that with Mark.
Great.
Any more questions before we go to public comment?
Just a comment on that. I think that's great. It sounds like you are capable, possibly, of proceeding without the overall district-wide assessment, which I think makes it a very efficient process. I was only going to observe that the four different entities in this community, in this committee, have four very different sets of constraints and procedures and approaches to getting funding together. And I tend to think that I agree with Rob that it's a little early to really start thinking about the zone of benefit assessment, but it may not be far off. But what we, I think, could usefully have is a conversation of how each entity would propose to approach their share of the infrastructure costs. You know, we have the ongoing conversation as to how the administrative, the basic operational costs of this committee are taken care of, and I think we need there's a little more work to do there that I'd like to see concluded here pretty quickly, but I think the time is coming soon where we really need to lay down our cards and say, okay, how are we going to make this work? It'd be nice to see a little bit, another annual report maybe coming out, or another set of monitoring, get a sense of whether we're headed in the right direction. We do have a couple of things that are a cost-benefit analysis that we'd like to have some more information on, such as creek discharge, such as to the extent to which do we want to denitrify the upper aquifer, whether there's a little more of that we want to do, whether that makes sense. So I think we need to keep we need to keep this on the agenda and be sensitive to the time coming in the medium future, maybe. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just having all the projects looked at, I think the larger our portfolio, as we're working on these through the individual entities, but when we're pursuing it as a basin management committee, having all of those projects, I think, would be better for the community, too.
Right. Okay, so we'll take public comment on items on the executive director's report.
Lindy Owen, I wanted to ask if we could get a little bit more information about where the denitrification for the upper aquifer is, because that seems to be one of the sources of water that we really should be using to stop drawing from the lower basin. And so the sooner those get underway and the blending, I would like to know what percentage of advancement we see that's taking off the pressure on the lower aquifer draw. I wonder also about the effluent disposal. Is it going to go to the schools pretty soon? We're beginning to see the drought sneak back into our lives as the hills are going from green back to brown, unfortunately. And I think it's going to be a hot summer. I know we're going to have fog on the coast, but it's still going to be, we'll be back into that state. And I think that's about it. Would like to know how well the sewer plant is doing in its performance, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment on the executive director's report? Okay, seeing none, we'll close. Do you want to respond to those questions?
Yeah, Lindy gave a great teaser to the next agenda item. We'll talk about that denitrification system. I do think that's important. I do understand that the treatment plant is meeting their obligations in terms of quality, including hitting their nitrogen numbers. And so unless the county has more information, we talked about that a few weeks back, and it looked like it was hitting the numbers. So pleased to report that.
Does the county now have the go-ahead on delivering the recycled water to the sites that we have planned?
Thank you for clarifying that. No, they're still working on both the retrofit packages with the schools, which are required to separate the utilities, of course, and then also the final agreements. They're all being actively worked on. I have a hope that that will be very soon, sooner rather than later, and that we'd be able to get that done short term.
But the water quality issue is now behind us. There's no problem with the water quality for delivering it?
Division of Drinking Water has already certified the tertiary status of that water. So, yeah.
Okay. Time to move on to the next item. The next agenda items are the action items. So the first one is 7A, the update on the status of the basin plan infrastructure projects. I know you talked a little bit about that, but you can get into more detail now, Rob.
Yeah, we had a little bit of overlap. I'm going to go ahead and, even though this is not a PowerPoint, just let me pull this up here so folks have it. As I talk through it. Okay. I don't pretend that that's large enough to clearly see, although it might help just generally move us along. I do have a PowerPoint on some other items later. This time we included within the table in your staff note not only the status of each project, but also where applicable estimated construction value. So I'll walk through verbally for the public who don't have eagle eyes. But so under Program A, the water system interconnection between the CSD and Golden State, which was previously funded, has now been complete. And so for S&T, if you want to look at the plans that we put together to do that, that was a bidirectional intertie, more complicated than what you'll have to do. But that has been built, and we no longer have to worry about that old vault lid falling in. So we now have the ability to more efficiently move water between those two systems. That's been a long time coming. The district's upper aquifer well was drilled and cased in December. We talked about this last time. We are bringing forward a proposed budget to the district's board to equip that well and move it forward, thinking that will be in construction late summer and then complete by June of next year or sooner, hoping that well can perhaps be up and running. And that is an upper aquifer well that will be able to blend with the adjacent lower aquifer well, which is literally 15 feet away, going to Lindy's comment. So that will give us an immediate shot in the arm of 100 acre feet plus of upper aquifer water that won't require denitrification because nitrate levels are actually pretty modest there, and we will have it as a blending well. The South Bay well and the Palisades well modifications are all complete. Those are Program A projects. We also added a little clarifying language on the Golden State's Skyline well and blending project. That one is going to be in construction shortly. Permits have been secured. Equipment has been purchased. And they're still looking to complete that in fall of 2017. And so that project's going to be in the ground shortly. And what we've done in this summary is we've added a line item under Program B. To remind folks, Program B is an upper aquifer program that involves denitrification. And really what Golden State has done, now that they need that denitrifying system, is they've really completed or are about to complete a first phase of that Program B project because that unit can be expanded to do additional water if necessary, even though it's meant just to be matched to the Skyline well at this point. When other sources come online at that location, that that equipment can be expanded readily. So really, we've already gained some ground under Program B. Program C, we have two line items there. One is the Los Olivos well that was recently drilled and cased. It's been tested, although they have permanent utilities and power, and they need to complete their equipping phase to bring that well fully online. Expansion well numbers 2 and 3, those are the project that the district is pursuing for well siting. And I thought it would be worth mentioning that a possible first phase, if we had the dollars, we'd probably be doing it now, is to run a portion of the water mains required to service those future wells, because it will also allow some of the district's existing assets on the east side to pump into its main pumping zone, so we'd get more production out of our South Bay upper and lower wells. Sorry to be a little technical there.
I was going, you lost me on that.
Yeah.
Maybe clarify that one.
Sure. The district has two wells that are at the corner of Napomo and South Bay Boulevard, called our South Bay upper and lower wells. Those wells currently discharge their water into what we call the boosted zone. It's a limited area of the community that's generally on the north and east side that has a higher pressure than the rest of the community. But because they're boosting into that zone, they have less opportunity to service the rest of the customers that the district has. And so under Program C, there's a pipeline that's going to be running right by those wells. We could hook up to that pipeline immediately as a first phase, and those could then service the entire district service area. And the dollars are there within Program C to do that. And if those dollars were available now, we'd put that project in the ground.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying.
Thanks for asking. And so really the status is we need to find competent well sites. We have a couple that are in play, and then get those permitted to advance Program C and its associated water mains. And then I've added under Program M as in monitoring, because the basin plan calls it that, a new Zone D&E lower aquifer monitoring well in the Cuesta by the Sea region. And we've put a budget of $100,000 on that. It's possible that it could be done a little cheaper than that, but we think that's a good and competent budget for that monitoring well that in 2004 we attempted to drill, but it was a collapsed well. With DWR funding, we couldn't complete it. So that remains a gap in our understanding of what's happening in the basin and a gap that we'd like to close. And I'd be happy to answer any questions on the status of the basin infrastructure projects.
Just a couple. Back in Program A, on the 8th Street well, wells drilled and cased. What's the schedule of 15 months to get it equipped? That seems like a long time to get a pump and a pipe.
It is. If we were a farmer, we'd have it done next week.
I was going to say, that would call Miller Drilling. Or, you know.
Indeed, we often do that. It will be a project. There'll be a blending pipeline, mixing facilities, the power and all those components.
So there's design. It's funded, but there's some design that needs to be done.
We have an RFP that's coming out for design of those facilities, and then we'll award that to a consultant, get it designed. The construction duration on that, with lead time on the pump and everything, Golden State can second me on this. It's slower than what you might think, and I've probably been overly generous on time to get that done by June of 2018. I think in reality it can probably be early 2018. But that's, you know, to give us a little bit of room.
And again, on any of these, do we have a sense of how big a change this makes in the overall basin health? You know, this $250,000, if we cut that time in half, we'd be getting basin effects. We'd be affecting our metrics. Is there a sense that this is a high priority in terms of affecting metrics, or a medium or low priority? What's its overall likely effect on the metrics?
It's high. It gives us another 100 acre feet of upper aquifer water from day one.
So my encouragement would be to slice that, and I used to be a farmer, so I can fit pipe if you need any help.
Yes, I think it's good advice.
Okay. The other one was, again, on community nitrate removal. You indicated that we're in an analysis phase right now of it's essentially cost benefit. You spoke about it being possibly expanded, and I wonder where we are in understanding, you know, the cost benefit. It's a expensive technology with the challenge of removing brine, but on the other hand, it has triple bottom line benefits in terms of cleaning up that aquifer and providing more supply and reducing seawater intrusion. Is there a time horizon on when we might know at least how to consider expanding denitrification?
Yeah, I think it's a good discussion item here. We know those cost factors pretty well, having experienced them at the district level, and I know Golden State's looking at this also. It's about $800 to $1,000 an acre foot to produce that
water. Which is not the worst. Not the worst.
It's not. It really isn't. And there's some chlorides that come out of it on the backside too. But it's more expensive than drilling east side lower aquifer wells from an ongoing cost perspective. And so that's why in the basin plan we contemplated programs A and C to avoid that cost. But as you know, if those programs continue to get stretched out, I think looking at other westerly sources of upper aquifer water that are already exist in some of the wells that are in the golf course area is something that can be looked at. Some of those pipelines are in place. The expandability of the equipment is pretty well known. So I think there is interest there, and Golden State can speak to this also. But as they get their hands on that technology, become familiar with it, watch it succeed, I think we can start looking at that expansion.
I'd look forward to that discussion about where dollars right. are best invested.
Yeah, and I think just to kind of add to what Rob added, discussed is that, you know, Golden State positioned itself as far as a transmission line, the facility that we have at Rosina can be expanded. So the capital side and infrastructure is a small component versus the operation and ongoing O&M costs that are tied to that. So that's where maybe with Rob's help we could get together and look at those a little bit closer and have some type of a budget summary of what that would look like and it's timing. But I think getting this project that we have on Rosina up and running and really get some hard cost out there. You know, we anticipate we'll have this by, you know, summer, late fall, up and running. And at that point, we got hard numbers that we could really define and know exactly what we're doing there.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We know that in general there's a lack of cost-effective brine disposal mechanisms in the county. That's a countywide issue that increases the cost of that probably by twofold compared to if you were in the Bay Area. So, interesting regional issue.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and take public comment then on item 7A.
It's kind of lonely up here. Lindy Owen, I wanted to question again, when we have these two sources of water, the clean upper aquifer water that hasn't gotten nitrification into it, or nitrified water, the nitrification polluted water, but we didn't talk about endocrine disruptors, and I think it's something to bring up because the signal of nitrates in the water generally means that you also have a lot of endocrine disruptors from waste and those will never be removed from our water. So when we talk about blending those, I would like to sort of say that I prefer to have clean upper aquifer water blended in than to have denitrified water because of those endocrine disruptors. And I know dilution is a solution, but it's not a good answer to long-term management of our basin. So it's something I just wanted you to think about. And then also, I recall the numbers of nitrates out by the golf course are the highest of any, almost any spot, and it's because Cabrillo comes down there, the horse farms are there, and then the fertilizers that get put on the golf course, they add up to the highest nitrate readings. So, again, we're sort of, I just wanted to throw that out.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Oh, Richard.
Richard Margetson, one question. Currently, for the CSD, since you're the district manager, or I mean...
Engineer.
Engineer. overall, for the CSD, what's the operation and maintenance cost to pump an acre a foot right now? An acre foot of water.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, seeing none, we'll close on 7A and bring it back. You want to respond, Rob?
Sure. I think we're sitting at around $300 an acre foot combined pumping cost in our system in rough dollars.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments before we move on? All right, Rob, 7B, update and discussion of the Los Osos Community Plan.
Great, thank you.
Recommendation is to review and approve the draft letter that we discussed at our past few meetings.
Yes, indeed. We did draft a letter along the lines of what we thought we heard at the last meeting, really restating some of the basic parameters of the basin plan and emphasizing to the entities who would review this letter the multiple programs in the plan and their status and how they relate to build out of the community. We also mentioned the distinction between the plan and SGMA, which is a topic that Coastal staff is only now beginning to interact with. We try to make clear that while we're separate from SGMA processes, we try to meet a lot of the same goals and objectives as SGMA within the plan for a sustainable groundwater approach. And then also bring them up to speed on the activities of this committee and the ongoing adaptive management that you'll be doing as part of your annual report process. The only other thing that this letter does is highlights something that you talked about in a previous meeting last year where you looked at build-out water demand numbers given some of the efficiency measures that have occurred within the community and revise the projected build-out to within a range that was significantly lower than what the basin plan contemplated. We wanted them to be aware of that as they do their future planning. And then provided an update similar to what you just heard on the various infrastructure programs, giving the commission the ability to gauge our progress on the objectives in the plan. We think we heard that we didn't include a lot of triggers and metrics in this. We pointed out the metrics in the plan, but really tried to stick to the basin plan itself as we authored this letter. And a couple of ways that we can walk through this. Of course, you can just make specific comments. If you have editorial comments that you want or your staff to look at a Word version of this, we could send that out and your various staffs can work on a red line that we could then attempt to conform as opposed to trying to reauthor it in a group context, which can be a little challenging, though interesting. And so perhaps some general comments and input, and then if you want to wordsmith, we can maybe do that at the staff level and bring it back for approval at a subsequent meeting.
Okay, thank you. Before, do we have any questions? I have a question, but before we go to public comment on substantive matters. So I know we talked about this, like I said, the past few meetings, but I know the direction that we ultimately took was to leave it more general and not discuss the triggers, et cetera, and I think this was on Supervisor Gibson's request. So I just wanted to get to ask you, is this in accordance with what you thought we should submit, or...
Yeah.
This is a broad-based question,
yes,
at this point.
Yes, very much so. And I don't know, Carrie Brown, I think, has had a look at it, and I think finds it about the right level of detail and the right breadth of coverage. The issue here is we're doing land use planning and the update of our community plan. This is a resource and infrastructure constraint on land use planning. And so I think the most important thing for us to do is transmit to the county planning process the details of how we go about our business and what they can expect in terms of a water supply. And we'll take it from there. So I think that's exactly okay. Right.
All right. So any other questions before we go to public comment?
Yeah, I'd just like to add on that. So if we're looking at the, I'm trying to understand the BMC's role in, I understand the county's land use role, but looking at our plan or our authority, do we, for future water use and how, is that something that will come before us? If there's a development out there, will that come before us from the BMC and we would have to meet certain criteria in order to have additional water on the basin? I'm trying to tie it all together of how our response ties into the county and what our role of purview is on.
So if I might, Mr. Chairman, I think this is a matter of coordination. You know,
right.
The BMC has said, look, we have to do this, and this to sustainably serve existing development. We also have in our plan another set of initiatives to serve a build-out that is consistent with what the county is projecting the build-out of the plan to be. So from a BMC as a body approach, I think our job is to make good on the initiatives that we've put forward in an appropriate time frame that meshes up with the development horizons that are going to be outlined in the local coastal program and the growth management ordinance that's a separate part of the county planning process. So I think we want to be on the same page. I think there's another level which is more jurisdiction by jurisdiction. So as individual development proposals come forward, the purveyor is going to, and again, coordinated amongst purveyors and with the basin management effort to decide that, yes, you will serve those, we will serve that development under these conditions in this time frame. So that's how I see the whole thing fitting together.
Well, I think that's similar to the way it is now. I mean, the district's not issuing any will serve letters. I'm not throwing you guys under the bus, but you guys are. So that's a matter of, you know, we're the individual water purveyor, so what the policies are. But I see the Basin Management Committee as trying to bring those policies together in right. The big picture thing. But as far as the individual purveyors, the bottom line call is ours. Yeah. But I would like to see an integrated effort in that regard.
And that's exactly why I asked the question, just to look at that timing and how we coordinate that together.
Right.
As this community plan comes together, I would like to see us as a basin management committee right. Come together with a
yes.
resolution to that, because
yep.
You know, we do have three different entities serving water under different...
Well, and I agree with Bruce. I mean, we're not looking at... obviously, we're not the purveyors, but we definitely can come up with... I mean, we're not going to look at this committee's not going to look at it on a project by project
no,
basis.
No, right.
But we will come up hopefully with policies that will be implemented
right.
From all the water purveyors.
And we've talked as a committee about how we bind the four entities together, possibly for financing reasons as a JPA.
Right.
If we go that route, that would be one place to coordinate policy. Short of that, if we don't need to go that route, maybe an MOU among entities to lay out how we're going to proceed.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? We'll go to public comment.
Mr. Chair, one thing sparked by the discussion, and that is special condition 6 within the coastal development permit.
Right.
If these vacant properties are in the prohibition zone and vacant, really no development can occur until the commission
right.
Itself determines that there's substantial evidence that there's a water supply for
right.
Them. So,
and that's what we're working the
right.
LCP update
yeah.
to provide.
Right. And I think everybody's familiar with that. I think we've discussed that one. I mean, it does raise the issue that this community plan update does have to be approved by the Coastal Commission ultimately.
Right.
So they'll have their crack at it too. So, okay, so we'll go to public comment, item 7B, the update and discussion of the Los Osos Community Plan.
Lindy Owen. I just don't understand how the county can allow growth and use of water basins, depending on who buys the property. Would it not be intelligent for the basin management group to look into buying some property and competing with individual wealthy home builders that come our way? Again, we're kind of like living in these two different zones. If you're in the PZ, you don't get to do anything. Unless you have friends at the county. But if you're outside of the prohibition zone, you can build, you can pollute, you can do anything you want. There's no septic management program that was supposed to be in place. We just have this kind of, it's such an unfair playing field for people that live inside the prohibition zone who have been burdened with the cost of the sewer. We have our own water things. If you're outside, you get a solar panel, put in your well, and you can suck the basin dry. So I would like to see that discussion come back to center again. Again, we don't know how much water is being used outside of the prohibition zone or the. So all those things are just still completely disturbing when we talk about trying to save a basin, and yet we're, you know, some people are in the right place and other people are never going to be in the right place. And then as far as the will serve letters, I would really like to see everybody come to terms with how we're releasing them. It isn't quite fair, again, that one water company won't issue and another will. So they're all properties within the basin. And later I will ask about the water credits and how that's working for people that are able to collect those and use them for new growth. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name's Steve Best. On that same tone, I've been going to the land use meetings here at the for LOCAC, and I've been seeing some interesting precedents being set with the use of the land, larger properties being subdivided outside the prohibition zone, and it seems to be setting a dangerous precedent that properties that were large enough to be outside the prohibition zone are now being subdivided into smaller lots that are the same size as the properties that are within the prohibition zone, but are now going to be treated the same as larger properties, but now they're going to be the same size as the properties that are the same size as the properties that are no longer going to be allowed to expand and have building rights. So I think there needs to be a halt and a proper plan put in place that is comprehensive and covers everybody equally, so that there is not this abuse to large properties that can take advantage of the situation when the prohibition is lifted.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment. I don't think there was any substantive questions unless you
good,
did.
Good comments, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Okay, so.
I just have one comment. You suggested, Rob, sending out the letter in a word form for comment, edited in comment, or suggested that it's in comments. I would like to see that happen.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you have wordsmithing you'd like to do, we can do that. Or if for some reason you're ready to approve this version, we can do that too.
Okay. I know I don't want to put Carrie on the spot, but since she's here, I will. What's the timing for this again? I know that it slipped, but could you just give us the timing again, please?
Our draft environmental impact report will be out this summer, and so we would like to have this feedback before then.
So if we brought this back to our next meeting, that would be time enough for you?
Yeah, that would be fine.
Okay.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, I'll just offer. I think it's ready to go right right now, but we certainly respect other agencies' wishes to ponder it. I think the only change that I would make was in the statement of the efforts of the Basin Management Plan on halting seawater intrusion. You know, our plan is halt and reverse, which might be combined as the word remediate. So I think the sense that it's beyond freezing things in the status quo, it would be the only change that I'd make, and I'm comfortable with where it is right now.
So what do you guys want to do? You want to bring it back, or you want to go with it this way?
I'd like to bring it back, if you don't, okay. If you don't mind.
Sure. Okay. That's fine. I'll send it out in Word.
Okay, thanks.
All right. So that was the discussion and the input.
Direction.
Direction back to staff. So that brings us up, Rob, to 7C, which is the review and discussion of the hydrogeologic studies on the climate change and the fall 2016 monitoring data.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Again, we'll start this off with patting Bill on the back for his report, his PowerPoint again. I know that's your first sentence in the staff report, so.
I thought it would probably be the most helpful to walk through the chloride metric and some of the fall monitoring results, because it really helps you to understand what comes in the climate change document. So we'll take this in that order if we could. This is a map of all the lower aquifer monitoring well points. And I've highlighted in a big yellow circle sort of, to me, one of the most important and interesting wells, which is down by the bay access there in downtown Baywood. And that is a Zone E well. A couple of specific points of interest as you look at the results from the fall. I wanted to remind everybody, because and we've said this before, but we're going to say it every time, and that is the seasonality of these chloride levels is significant, and it can change monitoring event to monitoring event. I mean, for years we watched the front sort of go back and forth on the west side, impacting certain wells, leaving others alone. And so I would caution everybody not to come to long-term conclusions using short-term data, either positive or negative. Let's look at the long-term trends as opposed to the snapshot in time. But I think there's some interesting results that are important. We'll go clockwise here. Up in the top, lower aquifer monitoring well number 11 is a deep zone well. That's the bottom portion of our lower aquifer. Zone D and E are both within the lower aquifer. Zone E is the lowest zone. So that is truly the leading edge of seawater intrusion. Because of its density, it comes into the deeper zones first. And so that's where we will see it first on that well that's right on the coast. And in our last fall monitoring event, we did see an increase in chlorides there. It was small, but an increase was certainly noted, up to 173 from 151 earlier in the spring. So we'll see what happens this spring, but that's a monitoring well to watch closely. Going clockwise, you see the district's 8th Street well.
Rob, I just want to make sure,
sure
we're clear on all of this. So, because when I read through this, there was some, it sort of seemed there was some discrepancy,
sure,
in it, or it wasn't done consistently. So what we're comparing here and what your analysis is showing here is the end of the summer, the August monitoring, with the end of the quote-unquote rainy season monitoring. I think in the future it would be helpful. I know what you said about long-term trends, but I think it would be helpful to include the year ago, so at the same time of the year, a monitoring comparison, as well as the most recent monitoring comparison. Because I appreciate the long-term trends, but we're kind of comparing apples and oranges, because we're comparing at the end of the rainy season, or pardon me, at the end of the dry season with at the end of the rainy season. So that may be a little bit misleading. And when I went through the report, I saw some places that was in there and some places, and I'm not, so I think just for, because what you're saying there is the first one, it went from 173 to 151 compared to April, but I would like to know what did it do from a year ago from that same monitoring program.
Good.
So I
just, isn't that in the table that, yeah, that we
it
provided?
Is, but it's not. I'm just saying people are going to look at this and not. Okay. I think we need to be consistent is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And maybe perhaps since we only have 4 points to talk about, I'll give some of that background context. For that monitoring well, LA-11, chlorides have ranged from a 2005 value of 77 with really a steady upward trend to 173. So that's about a 10-11 year trend in that well, increasing from 77 to the 173.
Yeah, I think that's helpful for people that may be watching this or whatever, because if you're not looking at the whole staff report, you might miss out on that.
Okay.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, this table is helpful for folks who want to dig into greater detail. The next one, looking clockwise, is the district's 8th Street well, and that one remains low. Historically, we've seen values that range from a high of 101 to a low of 73 over the last 10 to 12 years, and we're sitting right now at 93, which is similar to previous results. Golden State's Rosina well, a zone D well, is a very important well for this metric because it has a double weight within the metric. They actually put this value in twice in terms of computing the average. And we know that that well sits right on the leading edge of the zone D front. And that value over the last 12 years has ranged from a low of 150 all the way up to the current value, which is the highest reading we've seen of 389. So it's been above 300 since about 2014 and continues to rise. And when that one goes up, the metric quickly rises because what we want to see is when seawater intrusion is ultimately remediated, we want to see those metrics respond to our actions. And that's why we have things like double counting the Rosina well, looking at zone E wells that are very sensitive to seawater intrusion, because if we're going to make a positive impact on the front, we want to see that chloride metric respond. Not that there aren't other ways to do it, but that was the thinking. If you look at the lower left side of the screen, LA-8 remains at historic lows. And that's a very interesting well because you think, well, it's so far to the west, but it's not sitting in the deep part of the aquifer. So even though it's lower aquifer, it's sitting on the edge. And so it's truly a wedge of seawater intrusion that's coming in. What are the limits of that wedge? We'd certainly like to get that Cuesta by the Sea monitoring well done so we can see, does it stretch to the north or does it not? We can't make that determination with the data that we currently have. So we've got that gap. Any questions on that before I move on to a little bit of the climate change information?
No questions, but it would be very helpful. In the past, we've been superimposing on these maps a line to kind of show the wedge from year to year, and I think that would be very helpful to be showing the difference where that wedge is as a whole front rather than just points.
Right. We will do that every year at the time of the annual report. Cleef is under contract to do that, one event each year. So you will see that here in the coming months when we present the annual report data for 2016.
Okay. Yeah. And my observation on that, Bill, has been that line is essentially drawn on 2.5 data points. And that's thus it's a natural inclination, and I say this as a geophysicist who's back in the day criticized geologists for over-interpreting information, and I don't think Spencer's in the audience, so I can get away with this until he watches it on TV. But I think that reinforces the great importance of the monitoring well Cuesta by the Sea to help constrain where that, how that line should be drawn, because it is a large interpretation. It seems to me also that, and it's maybe stating the obvious, that concentrations are highest in the area of highest pumping. So this is the consequence of a cone of depression, essentially, that's being filled by seawater rather than void space. So again argues that that's part of the thought that I have about denitrifying upper aquifer water. And we saw it, I think, the Palisades well information here, which shows low levels because that well was shut down for a considerable amount of time.
In the lower zone.
In the lower zone.
Yeah.
It is, I think there's some ways to make some fairly timely progress on reversing this.
Thank you. So Cleve Harris prepared a focused technical report on climate change, and answering the question, what happens if we have long-term loss of our average rainfall? And this started a little bit, Director Garfinkel, with some of your comments and statements last year. The National Estuary Program people offered to help fund this activity, and they ended up contracting directly with Cleve and getting this work done, which we very much appreciate their efforts there, because we didn't have to use any Basin Management Committee resources other than a few hours of my time to produce this report, which is published on the website. I didn't want to overcomplicate. This is a pretty highly technical report, and it would, I think, take a long time to walk through the technical nuances, but I had a couple of things that I thought were critical. I just wanted to flash this table up without going through the specifics, just to note that we looked at each portion of the basin, upper, lower, western, central, eastern, and what would occur under various rainfall scenarios. In previous years, when we worked with the EPA on a climate change study, we really looked at the worst case climate change models, which were mid-century models that predicted one-third of our average rainfall was going to be unavailable, and that the long-term average would be 67% of the current average, which is about 17 inches a year. We wanted to calibrate this and look at various scenarios ranging from 100% down to that 67%, and then also look at all our current assets. We call them the 2016 scenario, where all our current pumping assets were in play, versus when we complete programs A and C. And so a lot of technical information, but I'll try to boil it down here to some simple conclusions. So, simple conclusion. When you look at the basin plan goal of only pumping 80% of the sustainable yield that's available in the basin in any given year, when you look at that goal and you apply that to different long-term rainfall scenarios, you come up with a very, very tight correlation between rainfall average and yield. That's the bottom line. In fact, it's eerily close when you look at our current assets. If we get 90% of the rainfall, we get 90% of the yield. If we get 80% of the rainfall, 80% of the yield. It almost follows a straight line relationship, which I thought was interesting and helpful, further confirming that this basin is a basin that responds to recharge. You don't have these other forces at play when it comes to yield. When you look at the completion of programs A and C, the correlation changes a little bit, but still stays substantially the same, and that is, as we have reduced rainfall, we have reduced recharge, and our yield drops. When you look at those programs, the yield actually drops a little more, because when we complete some of our program C wells, those wells are sitting on the westerly edge of Los Osos Creek, and as we lose rainfall, those wells just don't recharge as aggressively as we'd like on the west side of the creek. And so we do begin to substantially lose some yield under
under reduced rainfall. If you look at the worst case model predictions, where we only have 67% of our current rainfall, there's really no difference in yield between what we have today with our current assets and what we would have under Program C, just because we don't have much creek flow occurring and not enough to recharge those wells. An interesting conclusion. A couple of other important issues that came out of this latest set of model runs is that the location of pumping continues to be important. If you look at our distribution of pumping last year as purveyors, particularly for the district, we continued to use some of our west side wells to meet peak demands during the summer. And as we pump those wells, we really are not optimizing the yield of this basin. So even though our overall pumping was only 1,000 acre foot as purveyors, to the extent that we're pumping some of these westerly lower aquifer assets, there really isn't any sustainable level of pumping in those westerly assets. As you pump them, they're right in the middle of the seawater front, and chlorides are going to continue to come in. And so, consistent with the basin plan goals, we need to withdraw from those assets, shift to the upper aquifer and to the easterly wells, and get off of the Palisades well for Golden State, try to back off of the Rosina well to the extent practical. And so as we ran the model under current pumping scenarios, we found that if we continue to pump those westerly assets, we can predict a continued increase in chlorides. So I think from a Basin Management Committee's perspective, the big takeaway is don't just look at gross production in the basin. Look at the location of that production, and let's have a focused effort to get off of those wells that are continuing that cone of depression on the west side, those lower aquifer wells. And that completes the discussion. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Could you go back one slide before this?
That one
there, yeah. So what that tells us is that at 90%, then the we figure the metrics will go higher than our target of 80%. 90% rainfall will go higher than 80%. And the other question I have, and I wish Wallace was not Wallace.
Wait, Bill, hold on. Bill, could I interrupt you? I didn't follow. I'm sorry.
For 90% of rainfall, the average, if it goes down to 90%,
the second column,
then the metric goes up above 80%. Anything less than 80% is what we're looking for, and okay. Just a 10% change.
Now I understand.
Will make
Thank
it go
you.
Above okay. the 80%. Yeah. And I was just wondering why you're still using the 17 and a half inches as the average, which we've been using for a long time. Why aren't we taking into account the average over the full period?
I know that when Cleith and the peer reviewers looked at this, they sought for a balanced hydrologic period. Drought and areas where there is enough rainfall, and they selected the median rainfall amount. I'd probably have to defer to them for a more satisfying technical answer to that than what I can give.
I would like to know why they're choosing that and not updating it. Yes.
Okay.
So will the results of this study or memo go into our 2016 annual report?
I think it would be a good appendix to our adaptive management plan, yes.
Okay.
Excuse me. Go ahead, Ram.
That completes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, then, excuse me. Got a bad throat going here. So we'll go ahead and open it to public comment. Yep, Jeff. It's public comment on item 7C.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I just really wanted to make one point, and that is that It appears that our basin is fairly responsive to precipitation, and so I think that underscores the importance of the creek discharge that you're pursuing now, because when we are in periods of drought, or certainly in the summertime, which this is a seasonal program for the summer, that we're in essence mimicking nature in terms of how our groundwater basin, at least zones D and E, are recharged. So I think, again, my takeaway is that this data, to a large extent, underscores the importance of that project. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
Hi, I'm Lexi Bell from the Estuary Program, and we helped support this effort. And I just wanted to thank Rob and the committee for spending some time getting through the document with Cleith Harrison. We find it helpful to be thinking about the larger picture, both precipitation, groundwater, and the creek flow in the watershed. And so we can be a resource for that in the future, hopefully.
The committee thanks you for the funding, too. Oh, wait, I'm the chair of that committee. And Bruce is on it. So, but,
yeah. Lynette Tornotsky, I had a question on page 6 of the report where it says stream flow records are available for 19 years between 1976 and 2002. What happened after that? Is that something we should get more records on? Why did it happen, and what's happening next?
What page are you referencing, Lynette?
Page 6 of the Cleith Harris report.
Okay, thank you. I've got it.
Richard Margeson, I may have missed it in the report, but in the last 10 years, how many years have been above 17 and a half, and how many years were below 17 and a half?
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close it and bring it back. Rob, you want to respond?
Bill, I'm going to look to you to answer that last question because you had the... Do you have it handy?
Unfortunately, I don't have it with me.
If you don't, I can pull that. I mean, obviously, I'd guess it that 3 years it was above and the rest below, but let me see if I can find it here.
Actually, I don't think it's really relevant in that the modeling is done over a sufficient period of time to account for drought periods.
I think it's more just general interest.
It's an interesting local piece of data, but not pertinent to the
Well, it's in the previous staff reports where we had the climate action or Bill's analysis. Right. So if somebody wants to go back and look through there, we can bring it next week next meeting.
Yeah. So. You know, Lynette's comment was interesting in that I know that that stream gauge still provides some basic level data because I've been watching it this winter. Mm. But perhaps the primary device that totalizes the acre feet is no longer published, but let us bring that back. Cleith knows the detail on that. I think that's worth finding out about.
Yes.
Okay, anything else? Okay, so this is basically a receive and file.
Receive and file.
So we'll move on then to item 7D, which is, update on the water conservation program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We provided an update in coordination with County Public Works staff, and their current perspective is that they'd like to take our water conservation implementation plan addendum to the Board of Supervisors and look to get that plan endorsed. I wanted to be careful not to raise expectations beyond what I heard from county staff, but it does appear that there'd be some support for providing funding, certainly for some of the indoor programs contemplated in our recently approved rebate program, and possibly to the extent that a nexus can be determined at the staff level and at the board level between septic tank repurposing and recycled water use long term, that there could be some outdoor funding as well. But that's as far as we wanted to sort of report on that. But that would be going to the board as early as April, and that's something that County Public Works would take the lead on I also inquired with, is that me? I also inquired with county planning staff who run the Title 19 program, going with some of Lindy's comments earlier, just because it wasn't clear to me how things were being handled now that all the retrofits are essentially complete within the community. There are properties that are continuing to develop outside of the prohibition zone, or properties even within the zone that have betterments proposed but that aren't vacant today. So there is development occurring, and that development is falling under the requirements of Title 19. And what county staff is currently doing is they're allowing retrofits that are beyond toilets and shower heads. They're currently approving washing machines. And it seems to be what most development folks are coming in to apply for. Washing machines are one of the elements that were the least efficient within our analysis, just because they have such a short lifespan. And even if they're funded initially, there's no guarantee that 5 years later that they'll be continuing to be funded unless the code changes. So one thing that the committee may wish to consider is, again, consistent with your implementation update, having the county look at some of the programs, such as hot water recirculation devices or other measures, indoor and outdoor, that may be more appropriate long-term, and items that they could consider as Title 19 continues to function outside the prohibition zone. And we did provide a copy of the latest plan to county staff so they could consider that. And that that is your update for the day. Any questions?
I think we'll have questions on this one.
Yeah.
Does anybody have a question besides me? Or do you want to go?
Why don't you go first in the meeting?
Excuse me, madam. I didn't bring anything to keep my throat liquid here. Could you clarify this addendum that's going to the city, how that whole process works a little bit more?
Sure.
Or, pardon me, going to the county. Pardon me, going to the county. Just clarify that process for the people that may need a little further understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Just so we're all talking about the same addendum, we provided the link there. That's the addendum that we approved here at this committee level in November. And it's our understanding that the county will be considering that at a Board of Supervisors meeting to approve that addendum as an update to their water conservation implementation plan, which was previously approved by the Board of Supervisors, and that it will then be forwarded for an executive director approval at the coastal staff level. So those two steps. But step one would be, again, possibly in April, a board meeting to formally approve that addendum, and that when approved, that funding for those projects, those rebates that have a nexus with the wastewater project in the eyes of the county, which would certainly be indoor retrofits and possibly outdoor repurposing when it's related to recycled water, that funding may become available for those measures under the addendum, and that would all happen within a fairly modest amount of time, again, looking at the April time horizon. Does that make sense?
Well, the second part of my question was, how does this dovetail with the Title 19 retrofit credits, and is there overlap? So in other words, if I get a credit or rebate for X dollars, I can't still use that as a Title 19 retrofit credit?
That's right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Okay, thank you. That puts me in a different direction. So these are really two different sources of funding for retrofits. Under the item that the County Board of Supervisors would consider in April, that's a public source of funding flowing through the wastewater project.
In the prohibition zone only.
In the prohibition zone only, thank you. And the Title 19 funding is private source of funding, developer funded.
Outside the prohibition zone, because the prohibition zone is fully retrofit at a adequate level.
For toilets and shower heads,
yeah.
They are allowing some retrofit within the prohibition zone for washing machines. So that's the distinction, if that's clear.
Right.
Excuse me, I just wanted to clarify that because there is the overlap between the Title 19 and these retrofit credits, and I want to make sure people were clear that you can't double count this, basically.
Right.
So that the public funds aren't subsidizing a retrofit credit.
Correct.
Thank you. Sorry, I had to delve into that.
No, I'm glad you did.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll bring it to public comment on item 7D.
I wanted to ask, I've been thinking about something that could be very helpful to leaks, and that would be considering a conservation benefit from water alarms, and I don't know much about them, but they go on. If it turned out that all of a sudden your meter showed that you were losing a large amount of water, and I don't know how they work, that it would give you an alert, whether it's an alarm that goes off in the neighborhood. I think that would be something really worthwhile to consider because we've seen it happen before when people don't know they have a leak. We have two-month billing, and in 60 days you can lose a lot of water when you don't know that you're losing it. So I would like that to be considered as another option for water conservation. I see no advertising going on for any of the water credits or this opportunity to get a washing machine. There probably are people that would be happy to do that. Again, I'm going to still argue that we have over $3 million left that's coming out of my water, out of my sewer bill, and everybody else in the PZ zone that has not been touched yet for use. And I'm wondering about this Title 19 coming from development versus the other way that we're doing it, which is those in the PZ that are doing the credit. So I'm going to always ask where that $3 million, what it's being used for instead of the conservation it was supposed to have been used for 6 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindy. Jeff?
Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I think we'd all agree conservation is important and clearly something contemplated by the Basin Management Plan. I support any kind of retrofit program, any rebate program, as funds are available. From my perspective, though, there isn't that much funding available either at the county level or state level or beyond. So the question is, if there isn't very much funding available to perpetuate a rebate program, how is conservation going to occur? And we're either going to get more money, which I think is not very probable. So the only other opportunity is to modify the existing Title 19 program. And if this matter is going to the Board of Supervisors for consideration, why wouldn't we ask the board at the same time to authorize an amendment to Title 19 to allow for some additional conservation driven by private sector funding? You heard from your executive director that that the retrofit opportunities outside of the prohibition zone have been exhausted, and yet there's still a demand for retrofit credits by any number of parties. So we need to do something. Right now it's managed on a case-by-case basis by the planning and building department staff. I think that's an unwise use of their time because they literally have to deal with every little project on a case-by-case basis. So I would ask your committee to encourage our supervisor to broaden the scope of the board's consideration of this matter in April to include authorizations of amendments to Title 19. Thanks.
Thank you. Excuse me. Additional public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close and bring it back to the committee for discussion.
We'll see.
We'll presumably report back.
Update and provide input to staff. Do we have any additional input, or are we waiting until after?
We'll just wait till the board sees this item. I'm not sure when the crush of recent business has kept us from it. So we'll report back when it's happened.
We'll put staff on the spot. Do you have any ideas? No. Nobody? Okay. All right. So that will... excuse me. Gosh. Excuse me. I know you have to leave, Bruce.
5 minutes, Mr. Chair.
I know. We did that. You made it last time, too. So,
yeah.
Excuse me. So I have public comments for items not on the agenda. Excuse me.
Thank you, and I will just really encourage the conservation. I'm frustrated at seeing green lawns and expansive gardens, et cetera, outside of the prohibition zone. So we're all in this together, but obviously some people have no idea that we have a water problem.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay, seeing none, then we'll...
Can I just follow up? I think we talked about having a conservation subcommittee.
Well, let me close public comment first. Okay, now.
I was just commenting on Lindsay's comment, though. We previously discussed here having a public or a community conservation subgroup or
committee.
You know, I just... wanted to follow up on that and see if that's something that you know, there's still an interest in and that we plan to pursue or not. And I was curious if there was any inquiries from the public on that after our last meeting. So I think there was a few people talking about it. I don't know if anything came up that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I might. We certainly reflected on that as we prepared this agenda package. Once some funding is available to actually begin offering rebates, we know there's a list forming of people who are interested in rebates, even though they're not available today. That list is growing, and I'm getting calls, as well as the county is getting calls for interested people. I think there will be a lot of interest in serving on a committee whose function would be getting the word out, having uniform application of those, talking about some of the sticky policy issues. Do you do first come, first serve? Do you split
the
baby?
Outreach.
Yeah, so I think that's coming. I think staff thought that perhaps having some certainty as to when that first chunk of funding would be available would be a good first step.
Okay.
Can I give our legal counsels with a S a task for next meeting then?
Oh, yeah, do it.
Can we, I don't know what's allowed under our bylaws as far as formation of committees or whatever, so can we have that brought back to us next meeting as to what we can or can't do, or if we have to amend our bylaws to allow for committees? I always like to give the attorney some work here.
Just a quick question, Rob. You say you've been getting requests for rebates that we can't. What kind of rebates are they looking for? Are those people looking for?
Outdoor septic system repurposed.
Oh, that, so it's just those. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Then we'll adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you.
Perfect timing. Thank you.